Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 188 of Unblocking Crypto. As always, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Jason.
So this week, I think we're going to start out a little differently. There's been a public service announcement that might be good to talk about. The Ledger CTO has somewhat notified the world on X that there is a large-scale supply chain attack using the JavaScript ecosystem, which crazy is that JavaScript file has been downloaded over a billion times, and it is silently swapping the address on the fly to steal funds. So I think the quick summary, if you're not going to listen to the rest of this, is if you're using a hardware wallet, make sure you double check everything. If you're using a software wallet, I would probably refrain from making any on-chain transactions until everything is better understood. There was some possibility that people were thinking they were also trying to steal the seeds from the software wallets, but it sounds like it looks like to be more just clipboard hijacking and transaction interception. So at the end of the day, really your last line of defense is making sure the address is accurate all the way through, especially at that confirmation screen at the very end.
Yeah, I read that too. And I don't do a whole lot of transactions. I kind of just put it in self-custody or just sit on it. But I double check the front maybe five or six digits, and I double check the back five or six digits. But if they can generate an address quick enough that changes any of the middle digits, I would be
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how it's working or not, but that'd be a problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure how quickly they can have it done, but usually depending on some of the L1s, they take 10, 15 seconds sometimes for the confirmation screen to come up. So it is one of those things where just be very diligent and make sure that if you are doing any transactions, and there's a ton of people that do some DeFi stuff that is a ton of transactions really fast. So just be very careful at this point right now.
Yeah, this is the part that I don't like.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to some of the exciting news, I guess we'll call it. Senate Banking Committee, they just released their latest version of the Responsible Financial Innovation Act of 2025. This is the one that is what the Senate was working on versus the Clarity Act in the House. And the Clarity Act had already gotten passed by a bunch of people, and it was 180-something pages, and this version was 35 pages. Well, this one is now 182 pages. So they included a section titled Protecting Software Developers and Software Innovation, which we've been talking about, all the Tornado Cash stuff and free speech and all that kind of stuff. So that's been good. That stuff is missing actually from the House's Clarity Act. So I think there's a lot more people that are excited about the Senate's version now than the House's version. And I am not sure if the House's version is going to get passed. There's a handful of other things too that this new draft seeks to exclude certain actors from securities laws and disclosure requirements, I guess including that the validators are exempt from anti-money laundering and anti-fraud compliance requirements, which would be kind of huge. And then they also talk about that offering, selling, or transferring an NFT does not constitute a securities offering or sale of an investment contract. So that's also something the House's bill did not include. So the Senate has somewhat stepped up and put a lot of good things into this whole market infrastructure bill. Now, at this point, it's up to everybody to agree and get this in front of everybody, which they think is going to happen by, what, November-ish, I guess, is the hope. So exciting news then.
Yeah, my cynical thought is they're going to put a lot of things that sound good to the cryptocurrency industry and lobbyists and supporters, and then it basically makes the bill have no chance of success. And then they can say, no, we tried. Can we get more money for the midterms, please? If we just had more money, we could pass your legislation. Because it just has the feeling of giving the other side red meat of, oh, you want to cover up these crooks and you want to protect the people that are, you know, washing dirty coins and things like that. So while it is good for the language is good for the cryptocurrency, I don't know that it's good for getting the bill passed.
Yeah, it's one of those where I look at it that there was such a huge push towards getting more crypto friendly people into the legislation group. If at this point they put this up and you find a bunch of people that vote against it, I have a feeling those people are going to have a very hard time getting reelected moving forward, because that's definitely something that people are going to use against them. So my hope is that this helps overall, and everybody, I mean, this is really a non-partisan effort, right? So hopefully everybody kind of jumps on board and puts this in place so that the U.S. remains in the lead moving forward.
Yeah, it could be something like that where, yeah, we know this language doesn't help it get passed, but it's going to fish out all of the anti-crypto people so that they have a tougher time getting reelected this go around. So yeah, something like that. It just doesn't feel like a genuine effort to get a bill passed to me. It feels like a political game. It doesn't feel like, we know that the other side doesn't like this language, let's make sure we put it in. So I'm just trying to figure out the motives of politicians, which is kind of a crummy game to play.
Well, I mean, especially with the free speech on the software side of things, everybody's agreed to it at this point on both sides. Now it's just putting it into actual law, so the next administration can't completely change that. So I think it makes sense. I think both sides are in agreement, but yeah, I mean, there's always going to be games that are being played for sure. So the SEC and the CFTC actually had a couple of announcements too. They called it a new beginning, that they want to reaffirm that the need to ensure regulation does not stand in the way of progress. So the head of the SEC, Paul Atkins, and the acting head of the CFTC, Caroline Pham, wrote, "By working in lockstep, our two agencies can harness our nation's unique regulatory structure into a source of strength for market participants, investors, and all Americans." So that's pretty exciting to see. And then they also released a joint statement clarifying the rules of crypto trading, saying that exchanges registered with either the SEC or the CFTC are not prohibited from facilitating trading of certain spot commodity products. This includes leveraged, margined, or financial spot retail commodity transactions on digital assets. So that's amazing that they actually seem like they're working together right now, and they're trying to continue to push the U.S. and keep them in the lead right now, which is great to hear.
Yeah, and yeah, it's kind of like, this is why Congress doesn't do much, but they create agencies that actually get things done by unelected officials, because like they can get things done and they don't have to play these I'm constantly campaigning for my job stuff. So maybe something good will happen here.
Yeah, they've actually proposed a 24/7 markets policy to bring U.S. securities trading online around the clock. They cited the nonstop nature of crypto and global markets. So that would be really interesting to see too. And they've also floated plans to ease some of the rules for the prediction markets, some of the perpetual derivatives and the DeFi trading, kind of in line of like almost a unified super app model for finance. So, man, it's looking good right now. The question is, will anything happen? Or is this just all talk?
Oh yeah, 24/7 market would drive a lot of early retirements out of banking and Wall Street. They can't handle it.
Yeah,
they're used to bankers' hours, man. They don't have to do anything until after 9 and shut things down 4 o'clock, 4:30, and a bunch of days off. That's way different than 24/7.
Yep. Well, and during all of this, the other thing that I did read was Gary Gensler's text. About a year of them, from October of 22 to September of 23, ended up getting deleted. So this is the time frame that there is a ton of stuff happening with Genesis and Gemini and Nexo and Kraken and these tens of millions of dollars fines that were going on. And they accidentally deleted all his texts. So
yeah, and they're not running out of bleach in Washington.
The Federal Reserve Board had an interesting announcement last week too. They're going to host a conference on payments innovation. This will be October 21st. It'll be a focus on emerging technologies in the U.S. payment systems. They'll really examine stablecoins, tokenized assets, AI for payments, and DeFi. And with all this, they're going to live stream it on their website. So I'm really intrigued to see how that goes. And it'll be nice that it won't be behind closed doors and other people can see what's going on.
Yeah, transparency is good. So I'm
NASDAQ had actually quite a bit of news too. So they submitted a proposal to the SEC seeking approval for a rule change that would allow securities listed on NASDAQ to be traded either in the traditional electric form or as a blockchain-based tokenized shares. So if this is approved, investors could choose on a trade-by-trade basis to settle using the conventional methods or the tokenized versions of the same shares. The cool part is the tokenized stocks would carry the same rights as all the traditional shares, which includes all the shareholder voting and liquidation rights. The clearing would still use the depository trust company, but trade records would also be stored on distributed ledgers, which AKA is also the blockchain, right? So this is exciting. It's aligning with a lot of the increasing interest and experimentation in tokenization, both by financial firms and crypto exchanges. So I'm optimistic that this could happen, and all of a sudden we could see tokenized securities happening in the US, because I mean, they're already happening in the rest of the world, and just you have to be non-US to have access to it. Maybe this makes it real for US people too.
Yeah, and it'd be a huge step towards getting like tokenization of real world assets and all the things that we've talked about as potential future opportunities for blockchain. So that's a big step. I doubt the first shot lands, but we'll see.
Got to start.
Yeah.
The other thing the NASDAQ talked about was the digital asset treasuries. So they came out and told companies listed on their exchange that their shareholders under certain circumstances would need to approve plans to raise money to buy crypto. So I think this is, well, we've been talking about it, all these digital asset treasuries have been popping up, and when is it going to end? This is going to maybe force companies to have all their shareholders approve that they agree that it makes sense to go buy crypto before they just say, hey, we're going to go buy crypto and not tell anybody. And the reason this is happening, there's a company, Heritage Distillery, that they kind of got caught up on this. They decided they wanted to accumulate IP, which is a new token on the Story blockchain to help protect IP. And we talked about this a month or so ago. But at the end of the day, I think this whole wild, wild west of the DATs is probably going to come to an end. And it wouldn't surprise me if you just start to see a lot of quiet accumulation where companies are just putting a small percentage of their profit into Bitcoin for protection against inflation.
Yeah, my initial thought is MicroStrategy's already got the cat in the bag. They don't need to get all of this stuff done, even if NASDAQ says you got to shut everything down. MicroStrategy's in a huge lead. The other companies like Nakamoto and Jack Mallers 21, their shareholders are obviously on board, so that would be an easy vote. But for the companies that are like traditional companies with cash flows and operating businesses, it may be tougher to generate this sort of a program. So I don't know. I don't know what I think about this. It's not a big deal, because I think you've got a lot more people that are supporting the purchasing of Bitcoin, at least. But if you have like a BlackRock, you know, if you got these institutional buyers that hold 20, 30, 40% of the stock, and they argue about, oh, we need to buy Ethereum versus we need to buy Solana versus Bitcoin, that could get annoying. So I don't know. I don't know what happens here. That's going to be something to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I think those companies that already have the existing digital asset treasuries, that they're going to be somewhat separate. So they have a lead, and it's going to be a lot more difficult for new companies to get involved in doing this. Doesn't mean that they can't. It just means that they're going to have a little bit more approval from the shareholders. So it's probably a good thing, because I feel like we've been seeing all these companies that were barely going to survive try to say, hey, I'm going to start holding some sort of digital asset, and they're trying the newest altcoin to be try to be different. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and if you do remember, MicroStrategy did this voluntarily. They said anybody that doesn't want to get on this Bitcoin purchasing ride will buy your shares at a premium if you don't want to be involved. So they pretty much did this to get shareholder alignment with the vision. I'm not sure that that would have mattered. I don't believe they took a shareholder vote. I think that they just offered it out there. So So yeah, I mean, it's, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but it's the NASDAQ realizing that this is a real thing.
But before we talk about strategy, the one thing the NASDAQ did just do too, and it starts today, is they just approved Sol Strategies to list its shares on NASDAQ under the ticker STKE. So they were originally one of the first Solana DATs that they've been pretty much surpassed because they were only listed in Canada. And now they're going to have access to the U.S. market. And I think they're expecting kind of some big things at this point now.
Okay. Yeah. Keep a look on that. I mean, I got a call from somebody that was asking about some of these altcoins because of some ETFs that are looking to be approved. And I didn't know a whole lot of what to say to them because I haven't been following it that closely.
Well, the one thing you are probably following is strategy, right? So last week they were snubbed by the S&P 500, but Saylor said he wasn't really expected to be added on in the first quarter of eligibility. Robinhood did make it through. This was their second try, so no big surprise there. I think Tesla and Uber made it through in their second try. Facebook had to wait a year. So it's not a huge surprise that they didn't get through on their first time. But in the meantime, Strategy bought, I think, two more Bitcoin buys here in the past week. So back on September 2nd, they bought about 4,048 Bitcoin for about $449 million. Then on yesterday, they bought another 1,955 Bitcoin for $217 million. So they now hold over 638,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, and they're really going back to the common share ATM to support the purchases on that 1,955 Bitcoin purchase. 200 million of the 217 million came from the sale of common shares. So they've really pivoted on their guidance that they had for when they're going to buy at the ATM.
Yeah. Metaplanet was also active. Metaplanet, of course, wants to be the number two Bitcoin treasury company behind Strategy. So they bought 136 Bitcoin for $15.2 million. They now hold 20,136. What's crazy is their original plan by the end of the year was to have 10,000 Bitcoin and by the end of next year to have 21,000 Bitcoin. They've updated their guidance and they want to have 30,000 by the end of this year and 100,000 for the end of next year. So yeah, their plans have changed quite a bit too.
Sounds like a lot of the people I know that set these little stacking goals, like, oh, I want to get to half a Bitcoin, and then they get there, I need to get to one Bitcoin. Like, it just exactly. Keeps getting, like, once you have some, you want more.
Yep. And you mentioned Nakamoto earlier, too. Man, their stock has just been decimated. It's down about 90% since May. Their MNAV went from about 23x to 3x. So everybody is worried about where it's going, and the kindly MD piece is still running their health business. But I mean, it kind of goes to show that there's a ton of these Bitcoin treasury companies out there, and can they all be supported or not?
Not an MNAV of 20x. I mean, I don't know how you generate enough revenue to justify that. So, you know, three seems to be a high MNAV for these treasury companies. And now that there are more and more of them, that the premiums that they get on the Bitcoin they hold has got to drop. So that makes sense.
Yeah. A quick break from the podcast to talk about a little PDF I put together for everybody. I've been in crypto since about 2018 and made a lot of mistakes. And the one thing I always get asked is, what would you do differently if you got in today? So what I've done is created a PDF that talks about the 10 mistakes that I've made and how not to make those mistakes ever again. If you're interested, you can check the link in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/10 and get access to that PDF. That's the number 10 not spelled out. Back to the podcast. Bitmain is the other big one. I mean, they're actually probably the number two digital asset treasury, although they're with Ethereum. They just acquired just over 202,000 Ethereum, worth about $873 million. They now have right around $9 billion in Ethereum. In addition to that, Bitmain invested $20 million in 8Co Holding, which is a NASDAQ company under the OCTO ticker. That company, 8Co, is adopting WorldCoin as its primary treasury asset, which we've talked about that before. It's a whole scanning your iris and all that kind of great technology that Sam Altman is pushing. What Bitmoin has said is that they describe the deal as the launch of its moonshot strategy, where they're going to commit 1% of its balance sheet to ecosystem strengthening projects. So ACO stock has jumped 3,000%. It was at $1.43, ended at $45.08, but it surged up to $83.12 at one point last week. So yeah, a wild ride for them.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I guess, I don't know. I need to pay more attention to Bitmoin and Tom Lee on this, I guess.
Yeah, he's definitely keeping things interesting. So we'll see how it goes. Lion Group was also a NASDAQ listed company. They just announced their plans to exchange all of their current Solana and Sui assets for HYPE, which is the coin for Hyperliquid. It follows the launch of the institutional HYPE EVM custody solutions that they just did in the US by BitGo. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where this goes, and we'll talk about Hyperliquid, I think, a little bit later, some of the stablecoin stuff that's going on too.
Great. I can't wait to talk about Hyperliquid.
I know it's one that's on the top of your list. Clean Core Solutions is also one of those companies that is trying to do something different. They just partnered with House of Doge, and they have now formed the official Dogecoin treasury. They have a plan to fund token purchases with about $175 million PIPE offering. They just acquired 285 million Doge, worth about 68 million. So they are now the largest Doge DAT, and that happened in just under 1 week, which apparently didn't take much Doge.
No, Doge just doesn't die. I mean, it's like the original meme coin, and it doesn't seem to go away.
Yeah. And then the other thing that's somewhat related around the world in terms of Bitcoin treasury funds, Sora Ventures, they just announced plans to launch Asia's first $1 billion Bitcoin treasury fund. And their whole goal is to accelerate regional adoption of corporate Bitcoin reserves. They disclosed $200 million in initial institutional commitments. And then they intend to complete those acquisitions for the Bitcoin within the 6 months. And they're kind of positioning this as the vehicle for the largest coordinated treasury initiative in the region. So Sora is also part of the consortium that is seeking to get a controlling stake in the Thai listed DB8, which is the leading Bitcoin vault enterprise over there. And that just is going to help them kind of expand Bitcoin treasury access in the region. So I think these are supported by Metaplanet and a few other companies like that over there too.
Okay. That one's not on my radar at all.
Kazakhstan, we've been, talking on and off about them for months now. They continue to try to stay at the top of the list of all the countries that are getting involved in the crypto space. The Astana Financial Services Authority, which is the regulator for the Astana International Financial Center, has launched a pilot project that allows firms to pay regulatory fees using U.S. dollar pegged stablecoins, which means that this initiative introduces stablecoin settlement for license and supervision charges and is kind of positioning Kazakhstan as a regional hub for the digital finance innovation. So that's really cool. And then on top of that, the president just ordered the creation of a Bitcoin strategic reserve there, which is amazing. So Kazakhstan is literally one of the top countries in the world right now when it comes to pushing the envelope on all this stuff.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, because it surprised me when I first heard that Kazakhstan was like a major Bitcoin miner country. But if you're, that was probably 2017, 2018, like a long time ago. You got to get a flavor for this that early. It doesn't surprise me that they're like, hey, how can we figure out ways to optimize this and improve ourselves? So the government allowing be paid in US dollar backed stable coins is more surprising than a Bitcoin strategic reserve. I would think, they would be ahead of the US dollar stuff and focused on Bitcoin. But either way, it's the stablecoin market's going to grow. There's, the United States has made that clear that they're going to do that. So good for Kazakhstan. I probably heard about Kazakhstan more in Bitcoin podcasts and Bitcoin research than I have in any other geography, world history, anything. So that's, it's like El Salvador, man. It's like the countries that need it the most are the ones first. So that makes sense.
Yeah, so speaking of El Salvador, they just had their fourth anniversary of the Bitcoin law. So how do they celebrate it? They purchased 21 Bitcoin on, I think, 2 days ago. So they now hold just over 6,300 Bitcoin. That's 6,313. And during all of this, it's still the IMF is saying that they aren't supposed to be buying Bitcoin. So how they're doing this, still have no idea, but it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, the thing is, Bukele doesn't seem to care too much about like what outsiders think. So good for him. And I mean, if Bitcoin does what we all think it's going to do, then El Salvador will be in a good spot.
Yep. CoinShares is currently trading on NASDAQ Stockholm. They just announced that they have entered into agreement with the blank check company Vinehill Capital Investment Corp. in a transaction that will value CoinShares at about $1.2 billion in pre-money on a pro forma basis. So CoinShares is no longer going to be trading under the Swedish exchange once it moves and becomes public here in the U.S. So that's kind of a big deal. They manage around $10 billion in assets. So that's exciting to see a company like that moving and becoming U.S.-based here pretty soon, too.
Yeah, that's a good sign for U.S. regulators actually kind of doing what they're supposed to do and try to bring some industry into the country.
Yep. So I also was reading about the Easy Bitcoin app. Some people, if they've been over to the UK, have probably heard of EasyJet. And the founder there is deciding to launch a Bitcoin app. They're actually doing a brand licensing deal with Uphold. If you've used them before, it will end up being one of their 350 brands under the Easy Group's umbrella. So apparently this guy is kind of a serial entrepreneur. The cool part is they will have a reward system that will include a 1% welcome bonus and then a 4.5% annual percentage yield on USD balances. So good for them. They're trying to get more people and the everyday people involved in Bitcoin and making it easy for people to use. So it'll be exciting to see where that goes.
Yeah, I like these companies trying to integrate Bitcoin and try to take advantage of it. And I support that.
And then France was in the news again. Once again, for the wrong thing, they had another wrench attack. This is the 10th of the year in France. It was on a 20-year-old Swiss citizen. I think 7 suspects have been detained already. But, oh man, it's crazy. Like, over a quarter of all the wrench attacks that are being reported are happening in France right now. So I don't know what's going on, but it is not a place that I feel like you want to go if you're involved in crypto whatsoever.
Yeah, that's not why you want to be on the news if you're France. That's not good.
No, not at all. Tether, we haven't talked about them a little bit, but they are now looking at investing into gold mining. So they're having a couple of conversations with some companies to get involved in some of that since they own a crap ton of gold and they buy a bunch of gold for the reserves for their USDT. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where things go with them and if they end up getting into some of the gold mining side of things.
Yeah, I saw that a little bit and I was like, man, it would be neat to start a fresh company in such a legacy company like gold mining and just bring a fresh look and innovation and all that into an industry like that, where a lot of these old companies have such sunk cost into assets that they have to use. I'll be interested to see how Tether does that.
The other thing that I saw was Coinbase is launching their Mag 7 Plus Crypto Equity Index Futures ETF on September 22nd. So this will be the first U.S. futures product combining exposure to both the top tech stocks and the cryptocurrency ETFs. And it kind of, you and I have talked about doing something like this in the past. It's similar where each of the 10 assets would carry like a 10% weighting and the index would be rebalanced quarterly to reflect the market changes. So really intriguing that people can now get the Mag 7 and exposure to, I guess, Coinbase, Bitcoin, and Ethereum on top of that. So pretty cool. I'm kind of intrigued to see the growth of that and how quickly people take off on jumping on board for that.
Yeah, it's like a passive index fund for Bitcoin and crypto-based stuff plus Mag 7. I mean, that's, if you did that a year and a half ago, you'd be crushing it.
Yeah, that you would. All right, let's talk about stablecoins. I know you probably know nothing about Mega ETH Labs, but they're the team behind the Mega ETH blockchain. They introduced the Mega USD, which is the USD little M, which is going to be a native stablecoin built in partnership with Athena Labs on the Athena stablecoin as a service stack. So this new stablecoin is designed to keep transaction fees low while powering real-time applications across the Mega ETH ecosystem. And the reserves will be primarily held in BlackRock's tokenized U.S. Treasury fund, Buildle, via scrutinized. So I think Buildle currently has about a total asset value of $2.2 billion. So intriguing that they're doing all that, keeping it all digital and tokenized from an RWA perspective too.
Yeah, the RWA stuff, I mean, we've talked about it for 2 years plus now. You know, it's got to start breaking loose. Like now, to me, now is the time. Like if you can get some good things going and then you do hit this upswing that we expect to see in Bitcoin and crypto broadly, you can really make some headway. Like if you wait too long, you're going to start getting your name out there when everything's peaking, and then everybody's going to know about your crash on the backside and not know about your pump on the front side. So yeah, they need to get moving.
Yeah. So Hyperliquid is one of those tokens that has been hitting all-time highs here recently. They're a decentralized perpetuals exchange. They are talking about possibly launching a native stablecoin that they're going to call USDH in its next major network upgrade. They shared this on their Telegram channel last week. They are saying USDH is well suited for a Hyperliquid first, Hyperliquid aligned, and compliant USD stablecoin. What's interesting, if you look at the collateral on Hyperliquid today, 7.5% of it is USDC. Sorry, 7.5% of the USDC volume is on Hyperliquid as collateral. So Circle CEO kind of came out and posting that Circle was coming to the Hype ecosystem in a big way, and their new stablecoin, or Hype's new stablecoin, wouldn't replace USDC. So it'll be kind of interesting to see where things go with it too, because I mean, 7.5% of your total volume for USDC is on Hyperliquid. That seems to be a lot.
I agree. I'm curious to see how this arms race in stablecoins goes. So this is another little piece to that story.
Yeah. So speaking of stablecoins, Stripe and Paradigm are building a new layer one blockchain built specifically for stablecoins and payments. I think they're going to call it Tempo. It's being built with major design partners like OpenAI, Shopify, and Visa. And it will allow transaction fee payments in any stablecoin and have advanced privacy features. So kind of intrigued to see. I mean, they're not really creating their own stablecoin. They're just creating the blockchain that will deal with all of them. So it should be interesting to see where things go, especially, I mean, Stripe, it's a big amount of transactions that they're dealing these days. And if they're partnering with Shopify and Visa, there's a lot of big payment guys out there that are involved in this.
Yeah, that's what I heard when you were talking about this, is monster company. Like, I mean, if you combine those three, it's a pretty large market share of transactions. So that, you know, that's the kind of thing where the network effect works. They basically have a captured network effect when they start on day one, and then they can chew through it as they grow. So, you know, there's going to be a battle for stablecoin dominance, and I think people are moving in place now.
And what's interesting is, so Fireblocks, which is, they were valued at like $8 billion during their last funding round back in 2022. They just announced they're working on a network to let crypto and financial firms more easily move stablecoins between one another and build stablecoin products. They're saying their network already has 40 participants, including Bridge. Bridge is a stablecoin startup that Stripe recently acquired. So, I mean, I feel like Stripe has a couple of things in the works, and maybe they're the same thing. They didn't really talk about a lot of the same overlapping participants. So I'm intrigued to see if there are two different competitors out there doing a similar applications, or if these are going to be merged into one in the future.
Yeah, you might as well sail in multiple boats here in the event that something catches on. You want to be the guy that's able to take dollars from people and then turn those into interest-bearing treasuries and then collect the spread. That's the spot. So if you can do that on two different companies and make more money, then you might as well.
U.S. Bank just announced they're going to resume crypto custody services for institutional investment managers. This is a program they started back in 21 and then shut it down. But with everything that's changed around the regulation side of things, they're back in business. So that's good to see too.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's keep more stuff going. I mean, we need more action to really make a bull market happen. So I'm supportive.
Yeah. Speaking of action. So let's talk about the ETFs. The Bitcoin ETF saw a mix of inflows and outflows last week. The good news is they had net inflows of just over $246 million for the week. The Ethereum ETFs saw a five-day streak of net outflows, recorded their largest weekly outflow on record with about $787 million leaving the market last week. So, yeah, that doesn't look like a bull market when you look at those numbers.
Yeah, I think we had ETH doing some good stuff while Bitcoin was struggling, and now ETH coming back to earth and, you know, correcting and things like that. But if ETH does what Bitcoin does, it jumps up and corrects and consolidates for a while and then jumps up again. So we'll see if we're have some kind of pattern or who knows what. I mean, everything's different. So the price action could be different this time.
Yep. Cantor Fitzgerald launched their gold-protected Bitcoin fund finally. They announced it back in May at the Bitcoin 2025 conference, but it is now live. So I'll be intrigued to see the adoption rate of that too, where you have the downside protection with gold and the upside availability with Bitcoin. So could be cool.
I mean, honestly, there's some upside potential with gold.
True.
So that's not so bad. I had a friend back in 2020 that was trying to get me to kind of do some stuff in gold. And I'm like, I just think Bitcoin's the faster horse here. And so I kind of declined that and moved more into Bitcoin. But gold's made a heck of a run. I mean, it's something crazy, like gold's outperforming stocks over like a 20 or 30 year time frame, which that's troublesome as far as you've got inflation and you've got nominal gains in the stock market that aren't outpacing Bitcoin not outpacing gold. So if you hold on to this shiny rock, you're doing better than the efforts of hundreds of thousands or millions of employees doing innovation and working their butts off all day, every day for 20 years. Like that doesn't sound great.
Yeah. So Tron was in the news here recently too. For those people that aren't aware, Tron was founded by Justin Sun back in 2018. They are now leading all blockchains in network fees over the last month, surpassing Ethereum, who's usually in the lead, and they surpassed them by 28%. So Tron generated just over $56 million in fees in the last 30 days, using 267 million transactions. In comparison, Ethereum generated about $44 million in fees on 49 million transactions. So Tron had more than 5x the transactions, which is kind of wild. And the fees were, a little bit more than 28% or so total. So, I mean, their cost in per fee is our cost per transaction is way lower than the Ethereum one is today.
Yeah, I mean, Tron's another one that just doesn't really die. You know, this is going back to the 2020, 2021 market. You know, Tron was kind of a jokey, and it wasn't taken very seriously. But when they started putting Tether on Tron and it was cheaper to transact, that changed everything. And a lot of that action, a lot of the user involvement moved to Tron to save on transaction fees. And it's, I mean, people like the cheaper option. You know, there is a race to zero here that if somebody decides to be a Satoshi Nakamoto and create a blockchain that runs and operates without, you know, with minimal transaction fees, it's going to get really popular. So right now it's Tron, but in a race to the bottom, somebody else is going to figure out a way to do it cheaper. So, you know, 267 million in transaction fees in a month. Well, what if I could do it for 200 million? That's still pretty solid, but users are going to want that cheaper transaction cost. So that's fine with me. Race to the bottom, race to zero. It's like, see how close to zero you can get. That'd be awesome for the global South.
Yeah, exactly. So Justin Sun was also in the news from the World Liberty side of things. World Liberty is Donald Trump and Sun's group that just did their token release. They apparently froze Justin Sun's tokens after about a $9 million transfer to the crypto exchange HTX. So he's invested about $75 million in WLFI and close to $100 million in the Trump meme coin. And he pretty much posted that, hey, he did what everybody else did. He shouldn't be penalized for removing his tokens. And he was actually talking he wanted to buy more. I think he was just probably moving it to the exchange to help create some liquidity pools or something. I'm not sure, but it's kind of weird that World Liberty has singled out him and frozen his assets and nobody else's.
Yeah, he's kind of a shady, shifty character, though. So there's that.
That's I think a lot of his shadiness has been proven wrong. Unfortunately, it's been kind of FUD from China, but it still goes into the issue that if you're going to treat one person like this, then how decentralized and open is World Liberty? And why would anybody want to jump on if they're going to kind of freeze your funds for no reason?
The president's family's big cryptocurrency venture is centralized. That's shocking.
Hard to believe.
It's just call it a meme coin.
Speaking of the president's family, American Bitcoin IPO'd, I think, last week, and their stock dropped below its IPO price one day after debuting on NASDAQ. So it hasn't taken off like everybody else's, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, the timing's not great. You know, it feels like we're in a cooling off period right now. So it could just be a timing piece.
Yep. So Ondo Finance is one of the RWA companies. They just launched tokenized versions of over 100 U.S. stocks and ETFs on Ethereum. They're all backed by real assets held at registered U.S. broker-dealers. Of course, these tokenized stocks are only available to non-U.S. investors due to regulatory restrictions right now, but they do enable 24/7 trading and fractional ownership, so allowing all the global investors to trade U.S. securities outside normal market hours. So it's happening outside the U.S. Now it just needs to happen inside the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they're paying attention, but it's just so slow, man. It just takes so long.
That it does. You know, we haven't talked about NFTs in a while. OpenSea has been one of the larger NFT marketplaces in the past. They are launching $1 million flagship collection funding initiative to commemorate digital culture. So this collection will include more than $1 million commitment to acquiring, curating, and celebrating digital art and culture. I think they started with one of the CryptoPunks. So in addition to announcing its new NFT reserve strategy, they're also hinted at an upcoming mobile app and a new token launch. And for an announcement, the mobile app will enter beta in like mid-September. I think waitlists should open in the next couple of weeks. And the token generation event will release more details in October. So what they've talked about for part of this token launch is they're going to start sweeping millions in tokens and NFTs into a massive prize vault using 50% of all its platform fees beginning on September 15th. Those will all be passed on to as user rewards. There's already about $1 million worth of Optimism and Arbitrum tokens that are already loaded in the vault. So for those people that are into NFTs, I think starting after September 15th, the more transactions you have, the bigger your little vault grows and the more percentage of these rewards you'll get at the end of the day.
Yeah, I couldn't be less pumped about trying to put the paddles on and resuscitate NFTs. It's just it wasn't for me when it was popular. It's not for me now.
Yep. So I did also read on Google, Bitcoin's Google search volume is at 11th month low. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, we've been talking about it for a while that nobody's talking about it. This kind of verifies that nobody's even searching for it. Bitcoin has kind of become boring. Even gold is up 30% since the start of this year, while Bitcoin search volume is only up like 18%. So it's kind of wild.
Yeah, I know part of it, I think, is a lot of the curious minds have already gotten in or done some research or did a little enough research to get bounced out. So we kind of, I mean, I would have thought around 100,000, we'd see a big boost. And we really didn't. This is quiet. I mean, we're September. We broke 100,000 in December of last year. I mean, we're about to come to 12 months of a very tight trading ban from that, in that 100,000 to 125K range, like pretty tight little band on a percentage basis. If you know, you run the numbers and you look at like Bollinger bands and volatility and stuff. I mean, it's very different. I mean, if you look at last year, we were in a trading range, that 50 to 75K trading range. That was like 8-9 months too. So it's very different than what we got prior to the ETFs being released. So yeah, it's kind of boring, man. And there is this kind of theory. You know, last time there was, it's a super cycle. We'll have escape velocity. And this time it's like, Bitcoin's going to bore you to 500,000 per Bitcoin. Like that, yeah. I've heard that quite a bit. It's like, we're just going to have a boring grind up. Way better, as far as a crazy prediction, it's a way better prediction than this thing's going to go up so far and so fast that it can never come down again. Like that is unlikely, but yeah. A boring grind up, like you're just going to shake out old term Bitcoin people because they're like, this sucks. Like, get me into something. You know, I'm used to waking up in the morning and being super excited about a 10% increase, or absolutely wrecked about watching Bitcoin drop 25% in 4 days. Like this stuff, like we haven't, the biggest dips and things are like 20-30% over the last 16-18 months. So we're just not getting that dopamine rush versus that, you know, just total devastation feeling. So that, you know, some of these Bitcoin people may just be junkies. They aren't getting their fix from Bitcoin anymore. So as this thing grinds up slowly and these boring institutions buy, maybe the guys that need that fix are going to be, all right, here, you can have some of my Bitcoin. I'm going to go try to find a casino somewhere.
Yeah. Well, what I did see, and this is probably the last thing that I had on my end, was in terms of Bitcoin mining, we've now had the second solo winner from a Bitcoin mining perspective this month. So we're 9 days into the month, and we've already had two solo miners win, which is, I mean, they're getting like 350 grand for doing this, right? So it's exciting to see, even with all the growth in the Bitcoin mining space, there's still some little guys that are winning. So good news for Bitcoin and decentralization.
Yeah, no, I like it. I hope it motivates more people to throw a little miner on there. I talked about it with a friend of mine this week. I can't believe there's only like 20,000 nodes. Yeah, it's not a lot of nodes. I would think we need more of those for some security too. I mean, they're cheaper to put up than mining, and there's less of them. So, it seems a little bit like a attack vector. If you need consensus to make changes, if you spun up 50,000 nodes, you'd have 2/3 of the market. So that's a problem.
That's also a lot of money.
It's not as much. I mean, we got a lot of money coming in, man. Like there's a lot of money in Bitcoin now.
Yeah, it's financially, it doesn't make sense to attack it if you're going to spend all that money and then it would be worth nothing shortly after.
Yeah, but if you wanted to make a rule change in your favor to me, it's, we're kind of entering the major leagues as far as money goes. So, I mean, what does a node run you between $500,000? So it's really not that much, $50 million to get in, $500 million. So,
yeah, I think those are for the low end ones, right? The high end ones are thousands of dollars.
Yeah. So anyway, it's still, I mean, under a billion. We're throwing around big numbers these days. So yeah. If you raise money, I mean, these public money raises, I don't know. It's just odd to me that we have, that the hash rate is skyrocketing and the number of nodes is not going up nearly as fast.
Yep. What else did I miss?
Oh, man. The only thing I have here is that Bessent tried to fight Pulte from the housing side. I'm assuming it's over the interest rates and they can turn. But Bessent seems to be a hothead, man. Because I'm pretty sure him and Elon physically got into it. And then Elon came out with a black eye in the press conference with Trump. So he seems to, I mean, politicians in America have a history of getting like passionate about their position and and standing by what they say. Hey, this dude's got a little bit of fire. So, you know, we talk about the interest rates and, you know, we're in a kind of a political battle with Powell versus Trump and all that. I'm like, you kind of want a guy with a little bit of fire under him. And Bessent seems to have that. So, you know, he wants to lower rates because he's the guy that's got to refinance the debt. And I don't know. I think rates will come down. I just don't see them coming down a lot.
Yeah, definitely not as fast as I think everybody's hoping. That's for sure.
Yeah, and the rate, I mean, traditionally it's basically inflation plus a couple points of premium for the bank to make some money. So if inflation's 2 to 3.
All right. Well, I think that's all then. So I guess we'll catch up again next week and we'll talk more then.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.